Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Now, to begin with, in a few moments, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we will discuss some of today's business headlines.
In the business of this week, I was out and about again and caught up with Mark, one of the founders of Well, a new Irish canned water product.
In our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell tells us about a new strategy that aims to grow gin sales even further in Ireland by 2026.
Sounds good. After that, Conor Burke is here. He's joined the team to look at the Business Week in History. This Business Week in History, Conor is a student who's keen to be involved in the world of media and radio in particular, and Declan and I are giving him the opportunity to gain some valuable experience here on Nearby Business.
Finally then, David Bell from the HR department is here for our regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view this week, as hopefully employees return to their offices for one last time, we all hope. What do employers need to do to be ready? Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, indeed, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. And the text line, you should know it by now. We'll tell you what it is anyway. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or even better, you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So, welcome to the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave. We're going to look at some of the business headlines from today, Dave. Up first, Sisk and Lagan win the airport upgrade contracts.
Yeah, DAA last year began seeking contracts to work on different elements of an investment plan to boost facilities at Dublin Airport. The company confirmed on Wednesday that it has hired a joint venture between John Sisk and Lagan Aviation and Infrastructure to work on a series of projects in a deal worth more than $325 million. The partnership will upgrade pavement, drainage and electrical systems at Dublin's boarding gate piers, aircraft stands, terminals and the general airfield. The contract is part of a DAA's ongoing capital investment programme 2020 plus, meant to allow the airport to cater for a continued medium-term growth. In 2019, Dublin, Ireland's biggest airport, handled a record 32.9 million passengers. And we all know what happened after that, of course.
Yep.
DAA does not expect to recover that traffic for 3 or 4 years, but Dublin Airport will have flights to more than 200 destinations this year. Sisk and Lagan are among Ireland's biggest building and civil engineering contractors. Lagan Aviation and Infrastructure recently completed projects at Knock, London City and London South End airports. In 2019, Sisk built the Boeing Gold Hangar at Gatwick Airport in England and specialist facility for heavy aircraft maintenance. Alton McCluskey, on behalf of DAA, the infrastructure director there, predicted that working with the pair would ensure the company's completed its investment programme across Dublin Airport. And Paul Brown, who's chief executive of John Sisk & Son, said the joint venture was he's delighted that DAA chose it for the company for the work. And Steve Turner, who's managing director at Lagan Aviation and Infrastructure, said the pair looked forward to working with the airport's company and other stakeholders. Work continues on Dublin's third runway while the airport is also upgrading security screening for baggage check-in. DAA kept the building schedule for its overall investment plans under review during the pandemic as tough government restrictions hit travel. So they kind of kept on going, chipping away at it there, and maybe while the place was a bit quiet, helped out on the planning for post-pandemic growth. And as I say, it's going to take a few years to build that up. I was out there the other day, still Terminal 2 in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, place quiet enough,
still
some of the places not open and that.
Indeed,
but hopefully, Northsiders are quite proud of our airport. I think,
absolutely.
We like an old airport story here.
We absolutely do. Now, AIB are doing well and they're going to get involved in a state share buyback.
Yeah, AIB in talks to buy back some state shares after a $645 million profit. AIB said today that it is in talks to buy back some of the state shares as part of a plan to hand over $213 million to shareholders through dividends and stock purchases after it returned to profit last year. The bank posted a net profit of $645 million for 2021 as lending grew and its leveraged performance loans increased, while the company has also freed up $238 million of bad loan provisions, having taken $146 million loans charged in 2020 at the height of the pandemic. The benefit of this release was more than offset by the 318 million of exceptional costs. Now, Colin Hunt, who's AIB's lead chief executive, is now planning to return to paying dividends after a 2-year hiatus during the pandemic, with 122 million set to go to shareholders by way of ordinary dividends. The Irish government currently almost owns 71% of the bank. The bank said that it's also ring fencing a 91 million for share buyback program, adding that it is in talks regarding a repurchase of some of the state's shares in the move. Now, AIB executives had previously signalled to analysts in November that it was unlikely to start handing back excess capital to shareholders until probably 2023 and beyond, and then returning to regular dividends. That's because the group would be concentrating on the bedding in of its recent acquisition of Goodbody Stockbrokers, investing in a life and pensions joint venture with Canada Life, and completing its planned purchase of the 4.2 billion of corporate and commercial loans from Ulster Bank, of course, exiting the market in Ireland.
Great to see it. In some ways, you know, some people don't like to see the banks doing well, but it's usually the sign of a decent economy
when
the banks are doing well.
We all need them, love them or hate them.
Now, Fitbit, they've had to recall a million watches.
Yeah, this is a story which surfaced today. Fitbit received 115 reports of battery overheating in the US, with 78 reports of burn injuries, including 2 reports of third degree burns and 4 claims of second degree burns. Google owned Fitbit has recalled 1 million of its Ionic smartwatches after dozens of users reported burn injuries after the battery overheated. The fitness gadget maker said anyone who bought the $299 watch with the model number FB503 should immediately stop using the product and contact Fitbit for patching to return. Customers will receive a full refund and a discount of 40% to purchase certain Fitbit products, the company said. There were 40 reports of burn injuries internationally. Fitbit, based in San Francisco, introduced the Ionic watches in 2017 and stopped producing them in 2020. So it's over for them in terms of what they were making, but they are calling them in then to check on any possible faults.
Never a good thing to have to do, to make a recall of your product. Dave is out and about next.
The business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
This is Nearby Business on the Road. Well, Ireland's first canned water brand. They say it's best not to bottle things up. I'm here with Mark, one of the founders of Well Irish Canned Water. Tell us a little bit about your operation, first of all.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much for having us on. I guess it's kind of a lockdown baby to an extent. Myself and one of my best friends, John, we're, like a lot of people, we're kind of struggling through the pandemic day by day. Don't get me wrong, I'm in retail, so I'm one of the lucky ones that was out on the road, but it's certainly still affected all of us. John plays football in England, so he was kind of didn't know what to be doing with himself after that got shut down for the few months. So it's kind of something we always wanted to work together. It was sort of a pipe dream, really, from the get-go. But the more we got talking, we figured it might be a good focus to kind of maybe get us through the difficulties of the pandemic itself, and see could we put something together that might be a bit fruitful and just a bit of a challenge at the same time.
Okay, my first memories of bottled water, as it was water that wasn't out of the tap, stuff you could buy, was Perrier water back in the late 70s, and you know, people were saying Irish people are never going to buy water in a bottle, and we've seen they were totally proved wrong. This is a really nice can of water. It looks great. It looks like you want to drink it. It's really cool looking. And tell us a little bit about the product and where it's sourced.
So the water itself is sourced in Tyrone, and it's even if I do say so myself, it's of the highest quality, with a pH value of 7.6. And I think the taste really comes through with the can. It actually partners quite well, and it's really quite refreshing. And it's funny enough, I never drank sparkling water until I made it, and now I can't get enough of it. So definitely happy with the the quality of the water and the testing that's done on it makes sure that that every single can is filled to the optimum quality. Yeah, to make sure that our product is consistent and tastes great every single time you crack the can.
So you mentioned sparkling there. You do a sparkling and a still version, I take it. So are they defined by different colours?
Yes, so the sparkling can comes in a grey and our still comes in white with our Well Can Water branding on both.
Let's on to marketing then. Marketing such a product like this in a world of big sharks, and you know, obviously starting off as a startup like yourselves, you're a bit of a minnow really. So there are corporations selling these kind of products. How do you overcome that?
I guess maybe the best way to do that is to admit that and to say that we're small and we're looking to grow, and we're three everyday guys and we're just trying to maybe get a first step on the ladder for the brand. And it's important that we stay true to it and true to ourselves and explain that we're like everybody else and we want the best for the planet. Maybe the likes of the bigger corporations could learn a thing or two from us.
Good, I like that attitude, it's very good. And just in terms of you're kind of gone in the area of sort of guerrilla marketing, probably specific marketing, maybe festivals and things like that, I'm sure will be on the radar. This is the accessory to be seen with this summer, I'm sure, as everything comes out of lockdown. In terms of your distribution network, how have you managed in that area so far?
Well, we started very small with some local shops and retail outlets and pubs in Dublin, and then we in the midst of that got in contact with a couple of groups who had some shops further out, and we've kind of just there's been a lot of handballing and a lot of driving ourselves, and luckily enough we've kind of been noticed and been in conversation over the last couple of weeks with some bigger distributors, and hoping to get it flushed out across the country really, and hopefully to the UK as well over the coming months.
Yeah, so what's the plan then? Have you got a plan for 3 or 5 years, and you know, how do you feel that will kind of develop for you?
Yeah, the idea would be there's a big push from with us internally this year for festivals, and there's a lot of get rid of plastic going on out there in the festival business, so we're hoping to maybe jump onto that and show the guys what we can do and make sure to build our reputation.
What about the cost of a can of water as compared to a bottle maybe?
I guess bottled water isn't our competition.
Okay. So the space you're operating in isn't the bottled water space, you're creating your own space.
Yeah, and I'd like to think we're a premium brand, and okay, if you want to throw a water at me, I like what Pellegrino do, mm-hmm, but again, we're not a bottled water. So absolutely price is going to be a difficult barrier, but it's certainly not one that we can't jump over or find the key to. And I'd like to think that the quality again of the water will probably lead people to accept that you got to pay that little bit more to help the planet, and the taste maybe pays for itself.
Taste. What about adding in some lime juice, apple juice, orange juice, or making flavours? Is that something that you would be considering?
Yeah, absolutely. There's funny enough, we've been talking to some guys up north who have a special citrus that they've developed to add into their cocktails, for pre-made cocktails, and would you believe tasted our water mixed with that today, and it's absolutely gorgeous and refreshing. So that's a big plan coming. And the other thing that we're looking at putting in along with a flavour is maybe a CBD additive and some protein too. So there's loads of options there. And
mm-hmm. How long are you in operation now?
We will be in operation exactly a year next week. Very early stages. And I know,
so from how many pallets did you shift now compared to the start? Is it going well?
Oh, we're tenfold. We're absolutely flying. From a couple of samples in the bottom of a box, we've certainly moved on leaps and bounds, which is great. You know.
So do you have a logistics hub?
Yeah, we've got a warehouse out there in Rathcoole in Green Oak Business Park. Give it an L plug. It's a great spot, secure, safe, and great access. And I think that's only going to stand to us down the line. You know.
So your finances, so the bank are starting to say, this crowd are pulling in a few quid now, maybe we can help them out and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to help us with a lot of money in charges for it, but they're certainly going to do their best. Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark, for talking to Nearby Business. We wish you all the very best with your Well Canned Water.
Dave, thanks again to you and the team.
Yeah. A very interesting product, Dave.
Yeah, and that was my visit to Mark the other day. Great, lovely product, and I got a sample of both the still and the sparkling water. And I have to say, when I opened it, I said, I've got to take like metal or whatever.
Yeah.
It's lovely in the hand. It's nice and cool. It actually cools your hand. And I took a lovely photograph of it on the bonnet of my car when I came out, and I drank the still water on the way home, and it had a beautiful taste of it and really nice. Now, I might add a little bit of orange or something to the sparkling and have it at some point. But really nice and really enthusiastic. Great idea. And it's a little bit different.
Yep.
Absolutely. And as you say, he's not competing with the bottled water, because I think bottles are going to be on the way out anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. It looks like they're coming to an end. They're persona non gratis, or bottle non gratis, if you want to call it that. Well, we wish them the best of luck, and we'll keep tabs on what their progress is. Now, next in our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell tells us about a new strategy that aims to grow gin sales, Dave, would you believe, even further in Ireland, as if they're not high enough already. The producers have been getting together, Dave's been on the gin, and they want to do that by 2026.
Taking care of business on Nearby Business.
In Belfast last week, Irish gin producers and brand owners got together to launch new ambitious plans to grow gin sales by 2026. Their key goals are to grow exports in key markets and develop a vibrant domestic Irish gin market, all while continuing to support the viability of Irish gin distilleries. With the usually fashionable renaissance of gin in Ireland and the UK in the past 10 years, gone are the days where the only gin and tonic available was cork dry gin with a slimline tonic. We now have fishbowl style glasses with an abundance of exciting gin flavours, gin cocktails, tonic mixes and botanical combinations such as cardamom and red chilli, cracked pepper and light violet, ginger, cumin, coriander seeds, bitter oranges, fever tree and of course the original juniper berry. Anything can be rebranded and relaunched, and gin has discarded its tag of Mother's Rune to re-emerge as a refined new drink which meshes intrendedly with being close to nature. Starting out firstly as a medicine, it was thought it could cure gout and indigestion, but most attractive of all, it was cheap. In the 1730s London, notices could be seen all over the city. The message was short and to the point. Drunk for one penny, dead drunk for a tuppence, straw for nothing. In London alone, there were more than 7,000 dram shops, and 10 million gallons of gin were being distilled annually in the capital. Gin was hawked by barbers, peddlers and grocers, and even sold on market stalls. The average person could not afford French wines or brandy, so gin took over as the cheapest and most easily obtained strong liquor. The government of the day became alarmed when it was found that the average Londoner drank 14 gallons of the spirit each year. So, the government decided that a new tax must be raised on gin, putting many reputable sellers out of business, making the way for bootleggers, who sold their wares under such fancy names as Lady's Delight and Knock Me Down. Overnight, gin sales went underground. Dealers, pushers and runners sold their illegal hooch in what became a black market. Sadly, much of the gin was drunk by women. Consequently, children were neglected, daughters were sold into prostitution and wet nurses gave gin to babies to quieten them. Horrid scenes were captured in Hoggart's Gin Lane in London. People would literally do anything to get some gin. A cattle drover sold his 11-year-old daughter to a trader for a gallon of gin, and a coachman pawned his wife for a quarter bottle. Gin was the opium of the people. It led them to the debtor's prison or the gallows, ruined them, drove them to madness, even suicide and death. But it kept them warm in winter, and allayed the terrible hunger pangs of the poorest. The thirst for gin appeared insatiable. People sold their furnishings and even their homes to get money to buy their favourite tipple. In 1736, a gin act was passed which forbade anyone to sell distilled spirituous liquor without first taking out a licence costing £50, and a new gin act was passed which raised the duty on drink and forbade the distillers, grocers, chandlers, jails and workhouses from selling gin. Consumption fell dramatically through the rest of the 18th century. While nowhere is near as popular as it was in London in the 1700s, today in Ireland there are over 37 distilleries producing Irish gin with over 70 popular brands. The Irish Gin Strategy from 2022 to 2026 from Drinks Ireland Spirits, part of IBEC, who represents Ireland's best-loved drinks brands and entrepreneurs, has included measures to promote world-leading standards for quality and authenticity, develop the domestic market, promote Irish gin worldwide and support the viability of Irish gin distilleries. According to their figures, 2020 was the first year where Irish gin sales declined, which they attribute to the pandemic. Prior to this, between 2014 and 2020, the category grew by a staggering 184%. while the introduction of lockdowns completely declined the on-trade and travel sales sectors, not surprisingly, off-trade sales have soared. During 2020, purchases of gin and off-licences showed growth of 38%. During the past two summers, we have also seen the pink gin momentum continue, but this time supplemented by the rapid expansion of other flavour alternatives proving most popular. As people now finally return to restaurants and bars, and it's the end of the mask as we know it, following the easing of the COVID-19 restrictions, with global travel slower recovering, they said they expect the category to return to pre-pandemic levels over time. The new strategy details plans to maintain this hard-won market share and drive strong and sustainable growth in the years ahead. The Irish gin sector has grown extremely quickly in recent years, driven by innovative and ambitious producers and brand owners, dedicated to creating quality and authentic products, said David Boyd Armstrong, chairman of the Drinks Ireland Spirits Irish Gin Working Group and joint founder and head distiller of Radamon Estate Distillery, which creates short cross gin. He added, "Our strategy will enable the industry to take advantage of the opportunities in the domestic and international market and face the various challenges ahead. A key part of the strategy focuses on protecting the Irish gin category." One key element is to seek the introduction of rules in the marketing and labelling of Irish gin in Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK to ensure consumers know what they are buying. Currently, Ireland is the dominant market for Irish gin, but the strategy puts a heavy focus on driving export growth, earmarking the UK, USA, Germany, Canada as the key targets in the coming years. Asia and China specifically have also been identified as a key target market, which will not be an easy sell, as questions remain about their given understanding appetite for white spirits. These markets are a key target given their size, their value of culture and growing stature. Vincent McGovern, director of Drinks Ireland Spirits, said, "This new strategy was needed to ensure the sector can recover from COVID-19 and grow in the years ahead." Irish gin has been a true national success story in recent years. Their members employ dozens of people across both urban and rural Ireland, producing this much-loved spirit and exporting to markets across the globe. Irish gin is a premium plus product which has been established as a world leader in terms of quality and authenticity. This has and will be the key to positioning the category internationally. Gordon Lyons, MLA, Minister for the Economy Northern Ireland Executive, commended Drinks Ireland and the Irish Gin Working Group on preparation of this new strategy. So, whether you fancy the cocktail classics such as a Tom Collins, a Negroni or a Gimlet, or just a simple G&T from Blackwater, Drumshambo or Dingle, enjoy it responsibly. Gin up, stay cheerful, because brighter days are coming.
As they wave a fond farewell to Dingle Bay,
and thanks a million to Jenny for that look at what the plans are for gin to improve the sales, push the sales to their limit even further here in Ireland by 2026. Now, earlier on, Dave was talking there about the fact that AIB are planning a share buyback. But somebody else that announced that this week are Glanbia. They announced a 50 million share buyback. A food and nutrition group, Glanbia, saw its revenue and earnings per share rise last year and has announced that 50 million share buyback. In its full year results, the group recorded profit after tax of 167.4 million in 2021, up 24 million on the previous year, with earnings before interest, tax and depreciation and amortisation of 270 million. Group revenues were up 13% when compared to 2020 in constant currency, and up 9.8% on reported currency. Of course, that's when you're operating across many different markets. Group Managing Director Siobhan Talbot said that she was pleased to announce that Glanbia delivered a strong performance in 2021 compared to the prior year, and it was well ahead of their expectations, she said, at the beginning of the year, and was driven by strong global consumer demand in Glanbia's area of nutrition expertise across ingredient solutions and their portfolio of nutrition brands. Of course, we think about them as milk, but they do an awful lot more than that. She said their robust and effective operational execution delivered an excellent cash performance with 100.2% cash conversion in the year. And GPN, they also added that the German-based Level Up brand, they added the German-based Level Up brand to its portfolio, while they also acquired healthy snacking business Packmoor and commissioned a large-scale joint venture cheese plant in Michigan in the US. So they really are a global business at this stage. They also agreed to the disposal of its dairy business, Glanbia Ireland, to the Glanbia Cooperative Society for 307 million. And that, of course, reinforces and make sure that they will just focus in the future on nutrition business. The group returned over 91.3 million last year to shareholders via share buybacks, as well as a higher dividend of 10%. And they went on then to say that their focus for 2022 is to drive the growth across both GPN and GN brands. However, it said that the ongoing impact of cost inflation, which of course everybody has to deal with now, especially in dairy related cost inflation, will need to be actively managed. Glanbia expects adjusted earnings per share to grow between 2 and 8% in constant currency for the full year 2022, with that growth primarily driven by their GN business. A Goodbody stockbroker said the results presented a mixed update. Whilst overall this should not come as a surprise, they said they note the benefits of the transformation programme and secured supply and fixed pricing of dairy should provide increased visibility for Glanbia to navigate the challenges in the year ahead. Goodbody said. Sounds like a good end of term report, Dave.
It does indeed. The divesting of the cheese business, is that some? Is that what you said there?
The food business.
The food business. Yeah.
I mean, we think of Glanbia as milk. Yeah. And they're now sending it back to basically the farmers, and that's basically the co-op business. Yeah. And Glanbia themselves are focusing on the sort of byproduct of milk, which is the nutrition, the whey products, and all that, which is highly profitable, massive sales, sells for a premium level, and very much in demand at the moment.
So I love their name. It's Irish for clean food.
Glanbia. Yeah, very good. Okay, coming up in the second part of Nearby Business this evening, Conor Burke will be here. As Dave said earlier, he's joined the team to look at the business week in history, so we're making that a regular feature. Conor is a student who's keen to be involved in the world of media, and myself and Dave here are giving him the opportunity to get some valuable experience on Nearby Business. I'll also be talking then to David Bell from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view. And this week, people are heading back to the office again, hopefully now for one last time. It probably won't ever be as it was before. There will be hybrid models, I suspect, in many, many offices. And but what do employers need to do to be ready? David will have all the tips and tricks for that in the second half of the programme. And as usual, all of that to come here on Nearby Business.
Also, we're going to take a little look at what's happening in Fine Gael Enterprise Week, a couple of the online courses available, and we'll be doing all that after 6:30 this evening.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
From Mount Prospect Avenue to St Paul's.
From 1967 to 1997.
Classic rock, metal, punk, goth, and much more.
Tune into the Grove Radio Show on Near FM 90.3.
Relive those teenage kicks with your favourite songs from the Grove. Listener playlists and memories.
Join Lynn Kavanagh, Jennifer Roach and Brian Tucker every second Friday from 9:30 to 11:30 p.m. as we remember those teenage years.
Dedicated to the memory of DJ Cecil Nolan.
Here at Near FM, we are participating in the community call to help combat the effects of COVID-19. The purpose of the community call is to coordinate community activity and community assistance to where it is needed. We ask our listeners to look out for each other. If your neighbours or relatives are required to stay at home, check with them to see if they need supports. And if you are in that category yourself, don't hesitate to ask for help. Whether it's with shopping, fuel delivery, collecting medicines, or any other necessities of daily life. The local authority helpline is there as a safety net to ensure that everyone is looked after. If you need assistance and you live in Dublin City, call 01 222 8555. That's 01 222 8555. If you need assistance and you live in Fine Gael, call 01 890 5000. That's 01 890 5000. Let's all stay safe together from all here at Near FM.
The digital experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM digital experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
And welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we are on the air to 087-6944-500 or anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Indeed, you can, yeah. Now, Conor Burke is here with a look at this business week in history.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hello, my name is Conor Burke and welcome back to This Week in History, a segment where I talk about one important event that happened this week in the past. On the 2nd of March 1990, McDonald's opened its doors in China for the first time. Their first store was in Shenzhen, a small city located just south of Hong Kong. McDonald's already had competition in China, as Burger King had opened up their first store 2 years previously. McDonald's opened up in Shenzhen because of the low tax rates, adequate infrastructure, and low government interference. McDonald's in China was a symbol of how the Chinese socialist government were improving relations with the West and were opening up their economy to foreign investment. Then, 2 years later, McDonald's finally expanded into Beijing, opening up what was then the largest restaurant in the entire world. More than 40,000 people turned up for the opening day and were served by more than 1,000 employees. That gives you some idea of the size of the restaurant. After only 2 years in Beijing, the Beijing government got into a land dispute with McDonald's. The city attempted to close the restaurant and in its place build a shopping mall. They had already bought all the buildings next to McDonald's and had reduced them to rubble. The case was eventually settled when the Beijing government agreed to pay McDonald's what was the equivalent of $12 million just to move 150 metres down the street. McDonald's is not only the home of American food, it also became the hub for American culture, a hub for American culture right in the middle of China's capital. Although it was expensive, McDonald's was very popular, and by 1996 had opened up 26 branches over the Beijing area. One of the main reasons why McDonald's became so popular in China and all over the world was because the customer was guaranteed quick and tasty food. Another reason for the restaurant's success has been its accessibility. Most branches are open 24 hours a day and offer drive-through and delivery services. As of 2017, it's cheaper to buy a Big Mac in China than it is in America. In the States, it costs $5.65, while in China, it costs a mere $2.92 to buy the Big Mac meal. Nowadays, there are 3,500 McDonald's opened in mainland China, with more than 180,000 employees. Surprisingly, the most popular dish in Chinese McDonald's is the German sausage double beef burger. It consists of ketchup and two beef sausages. One of the most popular drinks in China is red bubble tea. Customers now prefer that over traditional drinks like Coke and Pepsi. The most popular breakfast in McDonald's is congee, which is kind of like porridge and it consists of corn, beef and eggs. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of This Week in History. Tune in next week to find out what events happened then. Thank you.
Thanks a million, Connor, for that, and we look forward to hearing what's happening next week.
Indeed.
Dave, now, next week is Local Enterprise Week, and there's lots happening, lots planned.
Yeah, Fingal Leo Week, as they call it, Local Enterprise Week. A few little things we just picked out to mention for people who are getting into business or have started business or a small business. Funding opportunities for ethnic entrepreneurs. If you're an aspiring ethnic entrepreneur and want to find out how you can create a successful business, don't miss this opportunity to join Leo Fingal Empower and the Fingal Ethnic Network. And this online event, you can find out how to make your dreams come true. This is selling this very well, aren't they?
Great. Very good.
You will learn about what supports are available to hear and hear from a panel of successful ethnic entrepreneurs who will share their journey on how they access accessed, should I say, finance and supports and opportunities. And that's on the 10th of March. And it's an online chat and a sort of a presentation. And it takes place between 10 o'clock in the morning and 11:30. So not an awful lot there. Details on the Leo website there. Also, the next one is future-proofing your small business using smart tech tools. And we want to work smarter, not harder in the future. This dynamic initiative, innovative workshop delivered by Noel Davidson. I've been at something by Noel. He's quite a good presenter, and he's very good on the tech front, actually, and on the social media front and all that sort of thing. Aims to help small business owners assess if they're using enough already available smart tools to save time and work more efficiently. And that's an online also, and it's on the 10th between 9:30 and 12:30, a little bit longer there. And another one then, social media mashup, future opportunities for your business. Optimize your social media activity and prepare for future trends with this dynamic event featuring expert advice from a host of social media experts. Discover which apps you can use to enhance your social media offering, the importance of blogging and vlogging, digital marketing, and future trends such as influencer marketing, long form and snackable content.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Now it does sound good, doesn't it? Yeah.
That's also on the 10th of the 3rd, but it's in the afternoon from 2 till 4:30. So check out all those. They're all online. You can do them from wherever you're sitting and you can enjoy them. I think there are sometimes a small charge for them. I'm not sure about Leo Week. Don't quite know about this one, but if you check them out, it's all happening between the 7th and the 11th of March. We'll have a little bit more of that on next week's programme.
We will, and there's lots happening. I mean, over the whole course of the week, there's lots more than just those things we highlighted there. There's many opportunities to network, both in person now, probably this year, as well as online. So there's so much happening, and you can check it all out on their website.
Yeah, I was out today, actually. I was in the National Campus, Sports Campus in Abbottstown. There was the construction conference there, a construction kind of event, a very big, lovely big event, lots of people there, and great to see everybody out again. The venue was quite warm, I have to say.
Yeah.
Everybody was kind of glad we didn't have to wear masks again, but a lot of people exhibiting there, a great bit of chat going on. I kind of get the feeling back that you would have attending RDS years ago and places like that. So construction summit was on today there in Dublin 15.
Excellent. Okay, we'll take a short break.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
Well, no matter where you go this week and last week, Dave, it's hard to avoid it. The war in Ukraine, we're talking about with Russia and Ukraine and all that's happening over that side of the world. But it's having a big impact on business, a big impact on markets. And it was an interesting development today.
Yeah, Russian President Vladimir Putin called French President Emmanuel Macron in what happened, in what appeared to have been a markedly more tense exchange than previous conversations between the two leaders. The 90-minute phone call, 90 minutes, long time.
Long
time to hold the phone up. I tell you, get a sore arm. Maybe they were on speakerphone. The call failed to deliver a diplomatic breakthrough all the same. A senior French official said it left Macron convinced, should I say, that the worst has yet to come. Don't want to hear those kind of things, really,
no,
do we?
No.
And that Putin aims to take control of all of Ukraine. Yeah, your country will pay dearly and it will end up as an isolated country weakened under sanctions for a very long time, Macron told Putin, according to a French official who added that Macron called on Putin to not to lie to himself. So he's really trying to reach out there today in the French way and sort of an emotional hug there to him and say, look, you know, we can work this thing out. Let's get there. The conversation, which French president said was initiated by Putin. So he actually contacted the French premier there, or the French president, to get this thing underway, which got, maybe gives it's a little bit of a clue
maybe
there.
That he's coming, reaching out, isn't it? That, you know, that it wasn't going the other way, that Macron was phoning him to sort of try and say, look, come to the table, talk. It is interesting that it went the other way. Yeah,
well, it came as Ukraine officials were set to hold talks with a Russian delegation, according to Russian and Ukrainian officials. But based on the two leaders' exchange, there was no indication today that a diplomatic solution could be in sight, according to French officials. The Kremlin's news services cited Putin as having told Macron that the objectives of a special military operation, that's what he's calling it, the term the Kremlin had used to refer to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, will be fulfilled in any case. Attempts to gain time by dragging negotiations will only lead to additional requirements for Kyiv in our negotiation position, Putin told Macron, according to what was issued after the phone call. So
you think about, you know, obviously it's a very difficult situation. It's very difficult for people there, but you know, for people in general. But you think about small businesses in Ukraine.
Yeah, and lots of them.
Lots of them. Yeah, it's a very big country.
They produce a lot of wheat, and that's what came into my mind when I actually first came up about Ukraine. I remember back to my school days in our business classes and sort of geography classes, there was pictures of fields of wheat. And that was one of the things in Ukraine, and they think they supply about 40% of the wheat, which is responsible for bread making and all those sort of things in the continent. And that's going to be affected, the knock-on effect of that. Of course, we spoke last week about the fuel prices going over $100 a barrel. I think it's 110 today, there, something like that. I say 100.
It's gone to 115, actually. It's the latest figure. I checked it there recently.
You know, things are just gone beyond different things. And it's going to affect everybody, and there's nobody immune from this. It's terrible to see the heart-wrenching photographs and footage on Channel 4, which is a brilliant news service every night. They have people right in the heart of everything, and they're interviewing people, and they don't really get emotional about it. They just give it as hard facts as it's actually happening. And the families that are arriving with children, and people are being very good in the neighbouring countries and welcoming everybody in, and then people are being dispersed. Over 1 million people so far up to today.
Yeah, and you mentioned the wheat. It certainly, you know, will have far-reaching consequences in the global economy, in the European economy, and hence in the local economy here, where we are in Dublin, in Ireland. And, you know, it'll be difficult. It'll be challenging. You mentioned the wheat fuel now in Dublin at over €2 a litre. As of yesterday. So, and when you think back, not that long ago, since it was closer to €1 coming into the pandemic, only 2 years ago. Yeah. So. It's going to have far-reaching consequences beyond the humanitarian, you know, which is obviously the main thing that everybody's concerned about, and opening up, as you say, with open arms to welcome people in. But from a business point of view, and from a an economy point of view, talk of recession coming again, maybe on the back of it.
Well, we didn't need this. The wave had started to come back again of business. Tax receipts
positivity
for last month were 10.4 billion or something like that. Things were coming up. Last year they took in more money than they expected in terms of VAT, as the kind of floodgates opened effectively after the pandemic. People started to spend again, and you couldn't get a builder, electrician, plumber. Everybody was getting stuff done, work done. That's all great. People were starting to feel good again about things, and then this is come along, and in the niggling little thing going on, obviously for us we're quite far away, which is not far away really if you're talking about things like nuclear and so on, which hopefully doesn't come to pass. We've been really bad stuff going on in that area, but like the economic reverberations and ripples will happen, and those kind of things take a good while to get over.
They do indeed. Okay, well, we'll move on to our next piece, which is hopefully a little bit more positive. It's a quick chat now with David Bell from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues, and this is about employees trying to get back to normal, difficult in what we've just been talking about, those kind of circumstances, but getting back to normal here locally, where people are beginning to return to offices, hopefully for one last time, and a look at here now. We're going to chat to David about what do employers need to do in their offices to be ready for when the employees are back in situ.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
I'm joined now again by David Bell from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view. Good evening, David.
Evening, Declan.
David, well, we're here again. Once again, we find ourselves returning to the workplace after another period of working from home. Hopefully, this is for real this time and forever, as they say. But I suppose it's never going to be the same, is it?
Oh, absolutely. And as you say, hopefully it is. It is the last time. There's been a couple of I wouldn't say attempts, but there's been a couple of circumstances where obviously people have returned only to be told to go back remote working where they can. So, yeah, I think this looks like, for all intents and purposes, this hopefully will be the final big return or you know, for employers particularly facing into it. They have had some experience in the past, but I think this is going to be a more permanent move back to what we would consider to be a more normal working environment. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of deja vu to it, because we've had a couple of false dawns here and a couple of you know, attempts to return to the office, and unfortunately hasn't worked out. This might work out, but it also hopefully will be the last time we have to think about this. But there are some things we do need to think about, and employers need to think about as people return to the office.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's starting to become apparent even now. You know, there's a couple of things, like obviously mask wearing was recently lifted, and obviously the return has been happening for some time, maybe like, you know, a couple of weeks up to a month. Yeah, and look, there are still individuals who are reluctant to go back for whatever reason. Others can't wait to go back and have been, you know, at any opportunity have returned to the office environment, and that could be a mixture of things, in that their, you know, their home remote situation may not be ideal from a work perspective. We've touched on this before, you know, not everyone has a spare room or a home office that they can go to, and you know, certainly a significant number of staff wouldn't have had the best environment, I suppose, and they want to get back to the office. On the other hand, there are people who are very comfortable working from home, who feel that it has been a fantastic thing for them, both in terms of productivity and in terms of just, you know, commutes and all of those things, and being able to maybe spend some time with people. So I think there's a balance, you know. I you know, all these things, the general advice is to, you know, go step by step. Don't maybe rush in and have everyone back together. Listen to what people have to say, and I suppose bear in mind people might have some concerns about going back, and others who'll be rushing to go back. So I think it is just trying to balance that. And again, you know, as I said, we've touched on this in the past, this whole idea of hybrid working, that will come into it. Not something necessarily to talk too much about this evening, but that is something else that maybe consider some sort of flexible working from home. Obviously, there is now you know, legislation which is coming in, as we said before, requiring employers to allow requests be made. But even without that, I think a lot of employers are looking at some sort of hybrid. So all of those things are still there. And I think it is just to sort of be open and considerate to everyone who's involved.
Yeah, and as you said there, good communications, meet people where they're at, if you like, and be just aware as an employer that things have changed, and you know, people will come at this from different standpoints. And as you say, all good points you made there in terms of that. I think the other thing as well that we've anybody who did work from home over COVID, over the last 2 years, you know, we've all got used to working in our own way, in our own little space, you know, in one little bit of a corner of a room, or the kitchen, as you say it might be. You know, we were able to control things like heating and music, and you know, anytime we wanted a coffee we could go and get it. There's probably a little bit of that understanding to be brought into the formal workplace as well now. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very valid point. And you know, look, some offices as well might look a bit tired now, you know, if no one has been in them for, yeah. Albeit people have obviously, you know, some companies would have maintained their work environment to a fairly high level and got them cleaned regularly and all that. But, you know, anyone who you know, the buildings themselves, they need some life in them. So there's definitely going to be workplaces that don't look as attractive as they might have done. There might be some, you know, they might highlight that it's a bit outdated. So, yeah, certainly if people have grown accustomed to their own, as you say, their own space at home or wherever they, some people may have taken, you know, space elsewhere. They might have gone down to the local coffee shop for a few days. They might have taken hotels. There was loads of places that people went. And so, you know, certainly employers need to be aware that the office may not be as an attractive, both physically and emotionally to some extent, as it might have been in the past. So, you know, I think people are going to make sure that, you know, they should check to see, can they do anything, even if it's small things, to maybe, you know, acknowledge that and reflect on that. So you mentioned heating. So, you know, like, people have got used to that. It's been 2 years without having to really take anyone else into consideration. You know, the whole mixing in the office. So some people have preferred the peace and quiet and don't want the you know, potential disruption of a busy office environment where people are coming in and out of their office and there's lots of movement and lots of noise. So, you know, there are some people who will definitely not want to go back to that. So I think employers will have to try not replicate perhaps what was on, but, you know, if there were things, you know, you mentioned, you know, music or radio, some people would have had the radio on in the background, and to consider whether that could be facilitated in some way as a way of assisting them in returning. So things like that, they may seem small and they may seem innocuous, but I think anything like that should be considered. And again, it does come down to, you know, communication and talking to the staff and to see are the things that can be done. And just generally making, you know, the workplace somewhere that is attractive and people want to come back to.
Yeah, and I think encouraging that individuality is probably a good thing for employers to do. I was in an office the other day where one of the colleagues had brought in their own lamp for the desk and their own plant, and was kind of wondering, could they actually bring in some more of what they got used to at home on their desk at home. So it was just interesting, and I think that individuality probably is something that employers could encourage as well. And you know, even though we're all individuals and we're all have that individuality, I mean, we're human beings, so sort of by nature we develop relationships with other people. We probably need to work on that side of it as well with colleagues when we're coming back. You know, it's difficult to maintain those relationships over Zoom or Teams or whatever it might be. You know, when you get back to having, you know, the cup of coffee in the canteen or the water cooler moments, as they're known, that's important too, to make sure that people are getting on with one another.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole raft of things around this, even from something as practical as a night out. You know, a lot of businesses are arranging things because it's been, you know, 2 years ostensibly. I know there has been sort of some, you know, some stages over the last couple of years, there's been opportunity for people, but generally the whole office, that whole office environment has been very rare. It's usually been teams or smaller groups. So there's that whole element to it. There's been changes in the workplace. So some people have retired or left. Some people have been taken on. There could be colleagues you've never even met. So all of that, you know, I think, again, as you say, Declan, it's to consider that and to be aware that everyone's just not going to go back to the old ways. And I think, you know, people are starting to look and treating the return, you know, without being too dramatic about a bit of a celebration, but using the opportunity to, you know, to look at, you know, those team building exercises are an evening out, or, you know, making sure that people are given the space to get to know each other again and to get to know people who they mightn't have ever met before. So, you know, you're certainly, we're hearing reports back. There is that sort of quite strange feeling for this. You know, there's been a lot of movement in a lot of industries for the last few years. It just happened to coincide with COVID, but there's been a lot of, you probably heard it referenced, the Great Reset or the Great Resignation and all these things. So there might be a lot of new colleagues that you've never met face to face. And that will all have to be, you know, resurrected to some extent. So I think it, again, it's something employers need to be aware of. And as I said, they can take some sort of steps to help that, but also be aware of it. I think, you know, it's something that needs to be looked at and people be made aware of. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it, you know, at one level it can be complex, but at another level it can be fairly straightforward. And I think to sort of quote what you would normally say in these situations for most things where the employer is dealing with the employees is, you know, communicate clearly. And of course, your famous advice, David, is to have a policy.
Yeah, absolutely, Declan. As always, it is a broken record sounding sometimes, but I think it is. It's important that, you know, where you are going to introduce something, or you have, you know, so to take your example of the person who wants to sort of personalize their space and make it a bit more perhaps reflective of what they've been used to, you know, you could, you know, go over the top. You could certainly let other people know that it's okay, rather than having everyone wondering, is it just that particular person today? Oh, so you could have a, even if it's just an email out to say, look, you know, if people do feel more comfortable bringing in their own bits and pieces, you know, within reason, things like that, just so that everyone is clear and everyone's aware, and recognize that these are issues, and to, you know, to communicate what as an employer you can do or prepared to do or willing to do or what plans you have to reflect that these are the situations that are going to arise.
Yeah, indeed. It just, the policy just makes it clear for everybody, and then everybody can follow it. David, thanks a million, as usual, for that comprehensive look at that return to workplace, and a little bit of advice for employers. And hopefully we won't have to talk about this again.
Thanks, Declan.
It looks like everybody's gone back to work if you go out in the morning and see the traffic.
The traffic can certainly tell, Dave. Yeah, but, yeah, absolutely. And thanks a million to David Bell again.
AOB on Nearby Business.
Now, some time just to squeeze in one item of any other business this evening, and some good news to finish up with. A brighter Dublin economic outlook is on the horizon.
Yeah, Dublin City's economy is performing well as the last of the pandemic restrictions are relaxed, but the latest Dublin Economic Monitor shows that constraints in specific sectors are still apparent. Now, the Dublin Economic Monitor, you didn't even know we had one of them,
I'm sure.
Produced by Grant Thornton, is published by the four Dublin local authorities. The monitor shows that private sector business activity continued to increase markedly in Dublin during the fourth quarter of 2021, with growing rates in Dublin exceeding those that recorded across the rest of the country. The strongest expansion was in Dublin manufacturing sector, which showed a reading of 63.8. A reading above 50 signifies growth. And these are sort of a metric that they use. The manufacturing sector was followed by the services sector at 59.7 and construction at 56.4. But despite the robust performance across the main sectors, the overall expansion rate in business activity in the fourth quarter was softer than in the second and third quarters of 2021. Meanwhile, the retail spend in the Dublin economy recorded further growth in the last 3 months of the year as consumer demand remained very strong. Total retail spending in Dublin rose by 0.4% on a quarterly basis and 5.1% on an annual basis to reach a new peak index reading of 138.5. The most significant increase was seen in the entertainment sector, where hotels, restaurants and bars experienced quarterly expenditure growth of nearly 15%, which obviously people were getting back
in.
They were locked in, happy
to be out. Yeah.
The monitor also showed that the Dublin labour market hit a new peak with over 760,000 in work in the fourth quarter. This is only for Dublin, the fourth quarter of the year, with notable expansions seen in the industrial and construction sectors. Dublin's unemployment rate also fell further to 5.4%. Remember, we were up around 20 odd percent at one point.
Indeed, we were.
Though some fluctuation in the rate may be expected in the coming quarters as the remaining PUP recipients transfer over to non-PUP state supports. Job vacancies in Dublin also soared in February, with postings on the Indeed website rising almost 50% above pre-pandemic levels. Meanwhile, Dublin's hospitality sector recorded a mixed start to the new year. Seated diners and restaurants jumped 132.8% in the middle of February when compared to the 2019 levels. Both occupancy rates and average daily rates at hotels in the city fell in January. Of course, January is January.
It's a difficult month. It's come out of it.
Andrew Webb, chief economist with Grant Thornton, said the stronger economic outlook for 2022 reflected optimistic businesses and consumers as pandemic restrictions eased more fully. But the thing we were just talking about there, potential constraints on growth such as labour shortages, inflation and the Russian invasion of Ukraine are building and may prompt a rethink, he cautioned. We know all about that.
Indeed.
So that finishes us off for today.
It does indeed. You mentioned there that you just got got to go out in the morning and see the traffic on the road. Yeah. I was in town yesterday for a meeting myself, a business meeting, and very, very quiet in the centre of Dublin City. But, yeah. But the numbers don't lie, so we'll have a look at that. Dublin Economic Monitor.
That's it. Grant Thornton sponsored.
There you go. Well, that's it for this edition of Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening, and we'll both be back live here next Thursday at 6 p.m.
In the meantime, don't forget, if you have an idea or would like to discuss or anything with us, indeed, get in touch on Twitter anytime at @nearby_business #localbiz. So for me, Dave Daly,
and myself, Declan Ralph, bye for now. See you soon on the radio.
Thanks for listening.